My wife and I have a 5.5-year-old and a 1-year-old. I did not write the book on parenting, definitely not, but I feel like I know more about parenting and myself every day from raising kids. So let me bestow some of my knowledge onto you. Three lessons I've learned. First, I've learned that when it's raining outside and you have to get a kid into a car seat, you're gonna get wet. Because it's impossible to balance an umbrella and a child at the same time and deal with straps. You just can't do it. So for them to stay dry, you as a parent, grandparent, guardian, whatever you are, you're gonna get wet. I've also learned that children should be seen and heard, because if not, I mean, well, here's a picture of my daughter right here. She got into my wife's makeup. Here's a picture of my daughter and my son. She dressed him up like a little princess. Here's a picture of the dog after he had his teeth flossed. Yeah, silence is not golden. Children should be seen and heard. That's lesson number two. And lesson number three, when you let go, somebody gets hurt. When you get swept up into the moment and there's giggling and there's laughing, and there's jumping and there's dancing and you just kind of get swept up, somebody's going to get hurt. My prime example of this, Charlotte and I were jumping on her bed one time. She was giggling and giggling and giggling, and then her finger went straight up my nose and it basically touched the back of my eyeball. It was so messed up. If you let go, somebody's going to get hurt. That's lesson number three. I mean, the point is this. There are certain lessons you learn as a parent, and there are lessons that you hope to pass on to your children and that they will pass on to theirs. When I think of my parents, I think the biggest lesson they taught me about being a parent from them is that whether I screw up royally or whether I'm the best son they could ever imagine, they'll still be my parents. No matter what, they'll love me and my four brothers equally. And will always be welcomed home, and I take that to heart with my children. No matter what happens to them on life's journey, they'll always be welcomed home. I think our gospel story this morning from Luke about the landowner, his two boys, tells us something about this as well. We often hear this story as the story of the prodigal son, the reckless son. But you know what? I think it's about a prodigal family, a family that has reckless love. One that loves so much, I think, that it seems reckless. And as we continue our journey into Lent and our series about Jesus at the border, I think this lesson could tell us something about how we as Christians might understand welcome and compassion and love of the other, the kind of love that opens you up, the kind of love that makes you vulnerable to being changed by another person's story. So let me tell you a little bit about that. Our gospel lesson this morning from Luke begins with some tax collectors and sinners coming up to Jesus, and they want to hear him teach. This isn't a small detail. Tax collectors, as we'll all know here in April, were despised. people didn't love the IRS back then. They don't love the IRS today. They're not everybody's favorite, No offense to any federal employees. In fact, every year I submit a document to get my student loans renewed. And I have to do some sort of privacy disclosure thing, and I always get a letter from the IRS in the mail, and it makes my heart stop for just a second until I realize, oh, this is just something letting me know that I accessed my own information. But the point is, people, they didn't like tax collectors back then. They don't really like them today. In this story, they're lumped together with sinners, generic sinners. And the religious leaders, the elite, the ones in power, they witness Jesus mingling with these folks, these undesirables. And they're upset that he welcomed them and pulled a chair up to them to eat with them. They thought it was inappropriate for one of their own, a rabbi, a religious leader, to associate with them, to hang out with them, not to talk about taxes, but to shoot the bull, to befriend them, to love them. So Jesus does as he does, and he tells a story to those persons in power. He says, "There once was a man who had two sons. There was the elder son who ate his veggies, did his homework, went to bed early at the crack and was up at the crack of dawn." Okay, we don't exactly hear that, but we hear that he dotted his I's, crossed his T's, that he was a good son. He did everything by the book. He was perfect, so to speak, picture perfect of being a good son. And then there's a younger son who's a royal screw up. He's the perfect picture of a dirtbag son. We know this because he does some things that are really crappy. to his family. He has the audacity to ask his father for his inheritance before he's even dead, and he does it out of order. He's not the oldest son. He's the younger one. Okay? He's not doing things according to the birthright order. So he's not mindful of the way things are supposed to be. And he collects his inheritance, cashes out on it early, leaves home, essentially divorces his family. That's what he does. So again, I say this is the perfect picture of a dirtbag son. Speaking of, story time. When I was in college, I remember going home on a summer break. I found this lockbox in my parents' basement, and it was mine. It had all kinds of stuff in it from when I was growing up. Had my first pair of glasses, my senior pictures that were signed by all my friends with these little mementos. I had all these little tokens and things from growing up. And in it, there was this old bond note from my grandpa. He got it for me when I was born. And I thought, whoa, I'm going to spend this. I am going to make so much money. It's worth like $1,000. It was worth 15 or 20 bucks when I was a kid, so it had to have grown. That's right. So I went to the bank, wringing my wrists, thinking, oh, this is going to be worth so much money, and it was worth $50. So disappointed, I cashed it in and bought beer with it. So in the parable that Jesus shares, this is basically what the younger son does. He sells his inheritance way too early, before it's worth what it could be, before its potential could be recognized, its investment could grow. He does it all before his father dies. He does it out of order, and then he goes off to some foreign land and blows it all. Man, what a dirtbag. So not only does he go off and fritter his money away in Las Vegas or Branson or Atlantic City or somewhere, but he sells himself out to pig farmers. And this is like rock bottom for a Jewish man. Jesus would have been telling this story to Jewish people out of a Jewish context. He's a rabbi, for crying out loud. So there's a good chance that the son in the story is probably Jewish. Jewish people don't eat pork. They don't raise pigs. And they definitely don't saddle up at the trough with them. But this son is so destitute that that is what he's willing to do. He's like salivating at the mouth, thinking about the pods that the pigs are eating. And it's then that he reminisces how good life was back at home with his dad and his older brother. And he kind of comes to himself and he dreams up this apology. Father, I've sinned before you in heaven. I'm no longer worthy to be called your son. Treat me like one of your hired hands. And he leaves. He heads back. He leaves the hog farm and goes back to the place he once called home and the man he once called father. Now, Jesus says that when this son was still far off, he sees his father sees him. Drops what he's doing, runs up, throws his arm around him, kisses him. Before the son can even squeak out this rehearsed apology, probably had this thing written on his arm with Sharpie or something, the father cuts him off, calls for the servants to get the best robe, a ring, sandals, to turn the music up, cook the best meat, give him the royal treatment. It's a good day, he says. Yeah, it's a good day indeed. The older son is sweating out in the field, and he hears the music bumping and dancing, and he decides to go check it out, and he finds out his father's throwing a party because the younger son is back. And man, he gets mad. He's like, screw this. He refuses to go in, join in the celebration. Why should they be throwing a party when this dirtbag comes back when I've been slaving in the field? I've been here the whole time. I don't get any parties. The father pleads with him to come on in and celebrate because the son is back. The one who was lost is found. The one that was dead is now alive. But again, the son says, you're treating me like a slave here. I've never disobeyed you once. You've never given me a darn thing. This isn't fair. The father says, you're always with me. All that is mine is yours. But he was dead and is now alive, was lost and now is found. So we had to celebrate. That's what he says. This story is a resurrection story. It really is. Even though we hear about it as the prodigal son, I think it misses the point when we say that. It's not just about one boy or two boys, but this whole family being reckless. The younger son screws up, runs off, blows his money, the family fortune. The older one does everything right, refuses to reconcile with his family. And the father blows everybody away. He blows the younger son away by welcoming him back home. The older son is blown away by how unfair this seems. The father's love seems reckless. Doesn't seem fair. But in a sense, this is kind of like God's love for us. for sinner and saint. And I think that's what Jesus is saying when he tells this story out of the context of sitting at the table with the tax collectors and the sinners. In a way, the story is less about lost boys and more about this whole family. And maybe a little emphasis on the dad, the prodigal parent, the one with an almost reckless love and welcome for his sons. I think when it comes down to it, the story can tell us something about God's love for us and perhaps what we're called to do as people of faith. This is a kind of extraordinary love, a prodigal love, a love that tells us something about forgiveness and compassion, welcoming the other, even when the other doesn't seem to fit our narrative for the way things are supposed to be. It's the kind of love that God has when we screw up and we turn back, or we turn to God. I think this story tells us why Jesus does what he does and says what he says and why he welcomes tax collectors and sinners. In a way, like the father in the story, who loves daringly and compassionately, who welcomes all to the table with open arms, I think the story is a resurrection story. The son who left home was good as dead, but he was welcomed home as alive. And I wonder if this story, as a resurrection story, might inform or invite us to think differently about those people that have fled political violence or oppression to seek asylum or to arrive at our borders, literally escaping the reign of death and empire. For them, arriving safely in the United States is a resurrection story, for death was what they fled, and death is what would await them if they returned to their quote-unquote home. Perhaps this story might inform us in our thinking. Might it soften our hearts and dispel the rhetoric of those that have come to our country? Because we've heard of them described as invaders or subhuman. And those words literally led to death in a New Zealand mosque just 2 weeks ago. They emboldened and empowered a white nationalist that killed a church full of people. Our story today is a story of second chances. God doesn't just love those that got lucky the first time and got born here out of luck. When we consider those that flee political violence and oppression in search of a better life for themselves or their families, the immigrants and asylum seekers, I'm hopeful we can recognize the trials and tribulations that these families have gone through in order to get a second lease at life in this country that we know and we love and that we've been in because of dumb luck. It's a second chance at life, a new lease at life, to arrive here safely in one form or another. And I think Jesus' radical hospitality and welcome with the tax collectors and sinners might invite us to think differently about those who our country has branded as untouchable or undesirable or a bad hombre because of their country of origin or their language or their background. Jesus hints at this when he pulls up a chair to the sinners and the tax collectors. I guess what I'd like you to consider in this story is an invitation to prodigal love, reckless love, love that makes you vulnerable to being changed by another, to being moved by the story of another person and perhaps someone you might not think deserves another chance. I think our story today is so powerful because we all identify with the different characters. We are the wayward son who screws up and turns back. We are the obedient son who thinks, this isn't fair. I don't want this guy to get another chance. Maybe we're the grumbling Pharisees and the scribes, or maybe we are the father. I want you to think this week that the story might invite you to see the world through the eyes of the prodigal father, the one who loves all of his children, the one who rejoices when the son that left and blew everything returns home, and the one who loves the one that never left, the son who was always there. This is a powerful vision for how we can be more like Jesus in our conversations about immigration and how we can be more loving in general. It's a vision for people of faith worshiping here at Christ Church. You know, if we want to be like Jesus, we need to be like that father who welcomes both the screw-up son and the poster child for perfection. If we want to be like Jesus as a church, so that all people feel like they can be welcomed home with open arms here, we need to welcome everybody to this place. Perhaps if we want to be more like Christ, we as people of faith and as a church might see things through the eyes of this prodigal family and take a nod from the prodigal father, the one who loves so much that even if someone feels like they could never have a home, they've got one here. So fetch a robe, get a ring, find sandals, kill the fatted calf, or if you're vegan, maybe a tofurkey, because all are welcome in this place. God help us.